So today I'm going to talk about numeric simulations of relativistic jets in gamma ray bursts, in particular the Clapeyron model. So first I'm going to talk a little bit about special relativistic numerical hydrodynamics, because we're using that to do the calculation, and a little bit about the gamma ray bursts, the Clapeyron model, and the the jet formation, and how jet is going to propagate inside the star, and then after the jet breaks out of the star, it's going to propagate in the stellar wing or interstellar medium, and there will be a transition from relativistic jet to Newtonian. Okay, so to numerically solve the equation of special relativistic hydro, the equations are kind of simple. You can just write in those kind of form. It's kind of in a conservative form. So what basically what you have is this first one d. This is the density in the laboratory frame, and those three are momentum. This is energy. So what you have is mass conservation, momentum conservation, that kind of thing. So just simplest. What you need to do is you need to solve this equation numerically. So what you need to do numerically, you have to do those. What we do is, you do those kind of things. So you can think this is a flux. You have a cell, and this is a flux at the cell boundary. So this is a flux leaving that cell. This is a flux entering that cell. So then you can update the state in that numeric cell. And if you write the equation like this, the equation, the old PDE equation now becomes a kind of ordinary differential equation. Then you can use this kind of ODE solver, to do the time stepping. Okay, so you need to calculate the flux at the cell interface, right? So in our code, we actually have two different approaches. So one is you have the states for different cells. So what you do is you want high order, not like you only want first order. So what you do is you do a reconstruction. The first approach is it's really reconstruction on density, pressure, velocity, that kind of thing. So then you get the those values at the interface. Then you solve a Riemann problem. Then you can get the flux across the two neighbor cells. So you can use that to get the flux. Another thing is this approach, we use the Wino. It's called weighted essentially non-oscillated method. It's just a kind of like what you do here now is you do the reconstruction on the flux director. It's kind of like a finite difference scheme. So okay, here just to show you a simple test, just a Riemann problem, and for those, this is a kind of very simple problem. So numerically, you can get almost exactly the solution. Okay, so now I'm going to switch gear, talk about the gamma ray burst models. So the kind of standard model is the fiber shock model. So what you have is to make gamma ray bursts and the outgrowth. What you have is you have the actual relativistic outflows, and the Lorentz factor probably larger than 100, several hundred, and then that relativistic outflow is not, they're not moving at the same speed, so they kind of have different shells. So you can have internal shocks between those different shells, and that make gamma rays, and that's what you see the gamma ray bursts. And another thing is you have a relativistic outflow, and eventually it will be slowed down by external medium. So you have an external shock, and that will give you the outgrowth. And so one thing is, there are also some alternative theory of such as Roger Blanford on the Newsweb here, they believe, you know, the jet is not kind of a hydrodynamic jet. It's kind of like a pointing flux jet, right? So if it's pointing flux jet, so for the gamma ray, this part should be different. You know, it will not be because of the internal collision gave you the gamma ray. Should be some magnetic field, that kind of thing. But you will still get the external shocks, the aftergrow thing. Okay, so since the jet is kind of relativistic, so you have kind of like relativistic beaming. So, but at late time, the jet start to, you know, slow down, so your velocity becomes lower, and it's no longer relativistic. Then what you have is initially you have a jet, and then late time it will start to expand sideways, and that sideways expansion actually can give you the afterglow light curve. You see a break. So, but still, you know, the central engine of gamma ray bursts is certainly still a mystery. So here I only showed some, you know, those models based on black holes. Of course, you can have all kinds of, you can also have the models based on, you know, magnetars or that kind of thing. But this is kind of popular model is based on black holes, is you have kind of hyper-creating black hole. So you have a black hole, and you have a kind of rotating, you know, accretion disk around the black hole, and then you can probably get a very powerful relativistic jet from that kind of system. And to get this black hole accretion disk system, you have all kinds of models to get here. You know, one particular model is the collapsar model. So you have a rotating massive star to collapse, and you can also have the neutron star. You have two neutron stars, binary neutron star merger, that kind of thing. But okay, but now there was a smoking gun. This is kind of like okay. So what I showed here is a spectrum of kind of GRB afterglows. So what you have here, this is from observation of this GRB, and this is the spectrum of it, and so this is a supernova 1998 BW, and so you can see how similar they are. So I mean, so this is the kind of evidence that show you the GRBs are related to supernova, at least some GRB, if not all, but at least for this case, it's for sure that there's a supernova there. So that means, you know, the at least some GRBs are related to the death of massive stars. Okay, so that discovery, you know, made the collapsar model, very popular. Actually, before that, it's already very popular, but that make it even popular is, you know, so this is based on the collapse of massive stars. So basically, what you have is initially you have a massive star. It's very massive. Probably the mass is larger than 40 solar mass, and then the assuming that massive star is also rotating. Why you want rotating? If it's not rotating, you may, you know, since it's so massive, it's probably the core collapse, just collapse into a neutron star, and then you still couldn't, support the collapse. So you will eventually collapse to a black hole, and you will probably end up, nothing. You probably just get a huge black hole, and then not that, you probably won't get a accretion disk. So if you have a rotation, then you probably get a black hole plus accretion disk. And another thing I want to emphasize is we normally assume that that massive star, the 40 solar mass, massive star, should get rid of its hydrogen envelope, because the hydrogen envelope is so big. So if you have a kind of like a blue supergiant or red supergiant, that that star might be too big. So even if in the center you have a jet, that jet may not make its way out of the star because the star is so big. But anyway, so here's from the simulation by Andrew McFadden and Stan Woosley. So you see here you have a black hole here, and you have a accretion disk, and then later you see the powerful jet. Okay, so those simulations were done by a Newtonian code. So in principle, that was wrong because we're assuming those jets are relativistic. So you have to use a relativistic code to do the simulation. So what we're trying to do now is move just one step forward, just make it a special relativistic. Of course, there are other important things you may have to include, such as since you are talking about black hole and it's so close to the event horizon, so you may have to do GR, and also certainly the magnetic field is important, and you may have to do the GR MHD, and also you have the temperature in the center will be so high, so you also have to consider neutrino transport can be so expensive, so there's so many things that you have to put in, but what we're doing now is just okay, let's just move one step forward. So what we're doing now is just the pure special relativistic hydro, but things we have a accretion disk there, so obviously the viscosity will be important. So we have what we did there is we put alpha viscosity there, and also nuclear physics can be also be important because you have the photo disintegration. So what that means is you have the core collapse. For example, you have nickel iron, you have iron group, so those heavy elements. When it collapses and the temperature increase, it will be, become helium. And then when the temperature increase even further, the helium will go to hydrogen, becomes free nucleons, free, proton and the neutron. That will absorb a lot of energy. So you actually have to consider those things. Those are very important cooling, process. And for the neutrino, if you want to deal with neutrino in detail, that's a very hard problem. So what we're doing is kind of simple, just neutrino emission. Just assume that it's an optical thing to neutrino. Of course, that's not correct, but that's a kind of first order. Okay, so we also have a equation state considering those nucleons, radiations, electrons, positrons, and we're not doing GR, we just put a kind of Newtonian gravity there. Okay, so our code is special relativistic code with adaptive mesh. I'm trying to argue why you need the AMR. I think you really need a very high resolution in special relativistic hydro. It seems to me the AMR is a must-have. Yeah. So the reason for that is you have an up limit for your speed. So you have a speed of light. So in special relativity, so let's see. Most of the stuff are moving at the speed of light. So then, the structure you get is much thinner than the Newtonian case. So I mean, the difference between velocity in the laboratory frame are so small. So what you get is the structure is so thin. Think about the Branford-McKee solution. If you actually plot those solutions, you will know how thin that structure can be. You need extremely high resolution to resolve the structure. This is one thing. Another thing is, in the Newtonian case, the material is moving in one direction, so the velocity in this direction doesn't matter because, it's just a this velocity doesn't matter, doesn't affect the motion in this direction. But that's not true in relativity because this, you have a velocity in the transverse, direction, then it changes your Lorentz fact and then it will change the whole dynamics and makes the problem extremely hard. I'm just showing you a numerical test. If you ever did those numerical, you know, simulation use the kind of Riemann problem, you will know normally for those Riemann solve, this is the kind of Riemann problem. This is kind of a standard one in special relativity higher, except this. If you forget about this, it's just, you know, initially you have two states. The left state has a high pressure, the right state has a low pressure, and they have same density. So you will, what you have, you have a shock wave, you have a reflection wave. Okay. But in this case, which we modify a little bit, let's see, you have a 0.9c transverse velocity for both, on both sides. And that will change your structure, you know, dramatically. So what you end up with is, normally with 400 zones, that's actually a lot in just 1D. This is just a 1D simulation. In 1D, normally with 400 zones, you can resolve the shock. But in this case, what you get is the shock position is totally wrong. The shock front should be here, but numerically you only get here. This is not because of our numeric scheme is not good. It's just everybody has that kind of problem. It's just so what I'm showing here is the 3200, here's you know, half a million zone in just 1D to actually get the, you know, almost perfect solution. So what I mean is you really need a kind of extremely high resolution.
Just to make sure that I understand it. So you're saying you need such high resolution
to
get the shock speed right?
Yeah.
The shock speed, right?
This is 1D simulation, so if you have only have, you know, 400 zones, this is the numerically what you get.
What kind of Riemann solver
do you use? So in our, what we are using here is Wino, so basically there's no Riemann solver there. Actually, that's not the problem with Riemann solver, because in another project we use a Riemann solver. We use the modified McInnes flux, but we're actually trying to use the exact Riemann solver, and you still get the problem. It's just the, okay.
So what's not resolved? Well, when you have 400 zones, uh-huh, what kind of structure is not resolved?
The shock position is wrong, right?
Yeah, but well.
It's wrong by a lot, you know.
It's wrong, but I cannot see unresolved structure. Every structure is resolved.
Oh yeah, you can argue that the basic structure is there, but the position is totally wrong, right?
Yeah, but how resolution can help you if you resolve the thing already before 400 zones?
Error propagation problem. That's why they come. But why?
The main difficulty is here, you know, the transverse velocity. So this is 0.9, and in the reflection, it starts to increase and starts to decrease. Then you have becomes a constant. So it has almost every scheme has problem with actually what the problem is with the contact discontinuity. And they have problem there, and that arrow affects the whole structure, you know, the position of this shock.
I can see the error, I don't understand
the reason. Yeah. Okay, so what we're doing is we're trying to do the, you know, the our initial condition is kind of like use our numeric code. Our initial condition is a massive star, and it starts to collapse. And then when trying to, you know, this is kind of like a toy model here, is how do you get a jet, you know? A simple toy model is just you just put some energy in this region close to the center, just like, for instance, in this case, what it did is, inside the 30 degree, you know, considering a kind of like a spherical coordinates, inside the 30 degree, and then you put some energy very close to the center, but only in the polar region, and that, you know, put some thermal energy there that, you know, actually can give you a jet. This is, I just show you some results. This is density, okay. So, you have a creating disk here, so we put some energy in this small region here, and so what you end up with when you start to put energy here, the stuff here start to try to move in this direction, because when you put energy here, it had, you know, make it the pressure higher, but it's hard to move in this direction. In this direction, you have high density, high pressure. So the easy way is for it to go this polar region. So that's why you're getting a jet.
And what kind of energy do you put?
Yeah, we just put the energy, just to make
that's
the yeah. Not giving. Actually, you know, in principle, you know, since this is a relativistic case, so when you put the energy, you should also kind of like you also increase the momentum, right? It's just.
Well, it could also be zero.
But.
So this energy deposition isn't self-consistently calculated from your neutrino emission.
For this case, it's not self-consistent. And what you can also do is, since you have a coin disk here, so you can roughly calculate what kind of you know, neutrino emission you can get. That's also, you know, one thing you can do. Yeah. But. So when you have this kind of put energy here, you can see this is low density. So you start to have a low density region here, and so you can see it start to grow. Okay. So if you zoom, this is zoom into the kind of inner disk. So you have a kind of low density region here, and. Another point I want to make is, so we are kind of assuming that where do we get those energy? One possibility is from neutrinos, So what I plot here is the free nucleons. So since the temperature in the disk is so high, so you can get free nucleons in this here, and if you have free nucleons, and you can get a lot of neutrinos. Okay, so what I plot here is the velocity in this direction, this axis, polar axis, in this y direction. So so initially, of course, it's kind of collapsing. So it's this is a minus velocity. So it's collapsing to the center. But then when you start to put energy in this region, you can see the material start to move out. So this is about 0.5 C. Material start to move out, you get the jet. And this is at late time, so you see the jet start to grow and start to moving out. Okay. So this was thinking, okay, so this is the kind of one way you can probably get a jet from a massive star. If you have neutrino, you have energy, deposited in this polar region, it can drive a jet. Of course, another possibility is magnetic field. So you have a rotating black hole there. So and you have strong magnetic field around it, and you can probably that's kind of MHD jet. Okay. So but we're actually facing some problem with the kind of simulation. So I'll talk a little bit about the problem we're facing. So I told you we're doing kind of alpha viscosity, but the problem with is alpha viscosity is not hyperbolic. That means it has the causality problem. So you can have the information propagate faster than speed of light because it's not hyperbolic. So the alpha viscosity in principle is wrong. And another thing is if you want to transport angular momentum, you want very strong viscosity. But when you make the viscosity to be strong, and you also have high resolution, you can actually numerically it's kind of unstable. We see oscillations if we don't do it carefully. But you really do need viscosity. Here I just show you one case. We have no viscosity, and we have a very high resolution, so the numerical viscosity is actually quite low. So what you get is there's no viscosity, no accretion. So what do we have here? This is density. So you can see here the high density here, and between here and here you have a gap. You have a very low density region because all the material it can accrete already being accreted by the central object. So you couldn't get that. So maybe the real, you know, to really solve the problem, we may actually do the MHD simulation, because now you have you know, magneto rotational instability that's kind of like you know, it shouldn't be considered as a viscosity, but it can transport the angular momentum. Or you can put some, you know, kind of that's a kind of complicated theory of a hyperbolic viscosity in relativity, you know.
Sorry, isn't that the same if you have an essential region, jet region, you have a low density area?
Oh, yeah, in this
region, mm-hmm. Is that the
same? In this case, we actually didn't put any thermal energy. We didn't try to make a jet. We just said, let's see, okay, we have a starlight collapse, so let's see what will happen. So yes, we didn't put any.
Jet is no energy.
Yeah. It's kind of like, no, this is actually not yet, because the stuff is still accreting. So in this case, we actually didn't say, okay, we get some energy output here, we're trying to make a jet. This is just let it collapse to see what happened, you know, see what, you know, what kind of accreting disk we can get. But the thing is, if you don't have viscosity, then you don't get the accretion. Initially, it will accrete, but after a while, it creates everything. So then everything it can. So then you have problem there. But anyway, we're still, you know, kind of trying to deal with it. Another thing I want to mention is not only you want to make a GRB, you also want to make a supernova, because you know they associate with each other, right? So one possibility to make a supernova. Okay, why the normal? You know, maybe the normal supernova mechanism won't work because it seems like for those supernova associated with GRB, you need a lot of, they're much more powerful than normal, you know, type 1BC supernova, seems like to be the case. So then you need to make a lot of nickel 56 to power the supernova. And so maybe it seems like the normal supernova magnetism probably won't work in this case. So you have to find some other way. So one possibility is you may have a jet, you know, you have a jet, and the jet will interact with the star. You have a kind of a cocoon surrounding the jet, and then that. But what we found is the temperature there is kind of too cold, you know, too low. So I don't think you can make enough nickel from the jet, you know, moving its way out of the star. You cannot get nickel from that. So one, you know, promising mechanism is this, you know, you have a accreting disk actually. You know, when you have a accreting, normally you also have this disk wings from the accreting disk. That may be the possibility that you can get supernova explosion from there. Because you can think of it this way. So normal supernova explosion is just it's a neutrino heating, right? You have neutrinos, and neutrino, you know, heats the material and drives the bubble, and that material make supernovas. And so in this case, you have a accreting disk. The accreting disk, the density in the accreting disk is actually higher than what you get in a spherical collapse. So the neutrino heating there can be much more efficient than the spherical collapse. So let's see, you know, okay, so you may get a supernova from a accreting disk wing. Okay. So I just talked about, you know, how you can make a jet from the collapsed model, but just to suppose, okay, if you have a jet, and actually there's still a question that, you know, even if you get jet, can the jet get out of the star? Because the star is kind of massive, right? You have to, you know, make the jet out of the star. And so we also did some simulations. It's also a special relativistic hydro. And one thing I want to emphasize is this, you know, even if the central engine, the power central engine is not neutrino, it may be, you know, kind of like a magnetic field, but if the jet itself is not dominated by magnetic field, and it's still a hydro jet, you can, and all the simulation here can still be, you know, applied to those jets. So what we did, we'll put jet by hand, just the boundary condition. We put a boundary condition there to make it, make a jet. So the question is, can they penetrate massive stars? And after they penetrate a massive star, do you still get high Lorentz factor? Because, you need a high Lorentz factor for the standard shock model. So it's kind of like put the jet by hand. So it's just we need some parameter for those jets. So this is the parameter we're kind of using. But okay, so the bottom line is in those simulation, what we found is of course those jets can break out of the star if the central engine lasts longer enough. Okay, so it's about if the central engine can last about 10 seconds or more, they can make its way out of the star. I also want to mention the star itself is the size of the star itself is about 3 light seconds. And here's a movie of the jet simulation we did. So here's the center of the star, we put a jet in the center of the star, and then it starts to make its way out of the star. Right? So you can see the normal structure from what you expect, from the simulation. You have a jet beam, you have a cocoon, you have a bow shock moving its way out. Okay. Here I'll show you some stills. This is here the edge of the star. So here's the edge of the star, and here's the jet. And this is only 1/10 of the star. So you can see the structure of the jet. And what I show you here is the pressure structure of one of the model we did. So let's see, this is 2 seconds, this is 7 seconds anyway. So what you can see is the pressure in the jet is smaller than the pressure in the star, but the pressure in the star is less than the pressure in the cocoon. And this is not surprising because the jet itself is already very relativistic, so it's most of its thermal energy cannot be too high, so the pressure is lower. Okay, so in those simulations, we have a parameter, the opening angle of the jet. We put the jet by hand. We have an opening angle for the jet. And what we found is, the star can collimate the jet. So, for example, even initially, we put a jet that its half opening angle is 20 degrees. That's a kind of a large angle. And then, after a while, it will be collimated by the star to less than 5 degrees. And the reason is that you have a very high pressure in the cocoon. So you can see here, the initial jet is trying, we put a kind of opening angle like this. But the pressure is so high, so it just shocked the jet beam, so make it, very narrow beam.
And it's very little mixing between the star and the actual jet material.
Only a little bit, not that. That's another thing is because it's kind of relativistic, so those instability is not, likely to happen because of the. Another thing is, okay. So maybe if you have extremely high resolution, maybe you have to resolve those small structures, but it shouldn't. Yeah. Okay. So another thing is in the internal shock model to make gamma ray burst, you need the kind of variation in Lorentz factor. So it's not like the whole jet is in a constant Lorentz factor. You want them to collide, so you need collisions. So you need the variabilities in Lorentz factor. So what I show here is the Lorentz factor gamma. So in our case, in our simulation, we inject a constant gamma jet. So the initial, Lorentz factor is a constant, but you have a kind of a very complicated structure in the jet. So this is actually not but anyway. So you have a jet moving kind of like this. Then you have a complicated jet, and you have the kind of the shocks to, oblique shocks to make those the beam to be like you naturally get a structure when you have a jet in a massive star.
What's the Mach number of each shock?
What do you mean? Which shock? I mean,
yeah,
you mean this is a bow shock here?
Yeah.
It's subsonic, but I don't have an idea about that. Because another thing you have to consider is the sound speed is not kind of constant in the star. So the density, you know, you have a huge gradient of density and the pressure. I'm actually not sure. Actually, I never.
The beam is very small. It's
uh-huh.
Stem maximum. Gamma ray bursts
in the
why it's so small.
Oh yeah, I will talk about that later. Why the jet? Okay, so here what I'm going to talk about. Okay, so Lorentz effect. For the gamma burst, you need the Lorentz effect to be very high, 100 at least, normally. So in our simulation, what we get is we actually only get about 10 at breakout. So that's kind of a problem. But it's kind of too low to make a GRB. But I think the problem is the jet itself is still contain a lot of internal energy. So let's see, the internal energy is roughly corresponding to Lorentz factor 10, kind of like, you know. So then you add those 10 together, you actually get 200. So that's, we think that's the way you get. Yeah, you add two Lorentz factors together, you get 200. Yeah. So of course that's just, you know, they do the calculation. Okay, you see, you know, you can get the Lorentz factor 200. But we also want to show that in our numeric simulations. So we can actually show that. This plot is kind of too busy, but so this is, those panels are at different time. This is the early time. This is kind of 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 12 seconds, 20. This final one is 70 seconds. So here the maximum value is 20. Here it's actually more than 20. Because we want to show some structure, so we didn't put the maximum. But here it reached more than 100. So that's, you know, we numerically we show that even if initially you only get 10, but eventually you can get that because the jet still contain a lot of internal energy. And another interesting thing about that is, So when the jet break out, you can see you have a cocoon surrounding the jet. So the cocoon is actually, the Lorentz effect here is actually a field. So then after it break out of the star, you have a very low density medium outside the star. So it start to, the cocoon start to, you know, explode, start to move, you know, expand sideways. That can also be interesting because, you know, the jet beam itself is only less than 5 degrees, but even at 10 degrees or something, you can still see a lot of kind of hot, you know, relativistic material there.
Do you have a lot of internal shocks present in the gamma or 100 region?
We don't have the resolution for that. So.
But you expect them to survive?
That can be complicated. I think that can be actually quite complicated. Because there's another thing is, you know, during the, okay, so when it first break out of star, we're saying, okay, Lorentz factor is only 10, so you'll grow from 10 to 100, right? So, but in our code, we don't have any kind of, it's kind of adiabatic, so it's all the energy is still there, but in reality, you have radiations and the opacity, you know, it's, you may have some energy leaking out of your jet, so then it's kind of a little bit complex. But we did some simple estimate here. You can still kind of okay. You consider it's you know, kind of adiabatic, you know, it's still optically sick kind of.
Do you assume steady injection in your?
Yes, in the bottom. In the bottom.
I know steady injection is why, because that's how you find down shocks.
Well, but that's what this argument is.
Yeah. So our argument is, you even if it's a constant injection, you still get variation from.
Yeah, yeah, but if you, they may smooth out. If you don't get shells, they will index the original region, they won't collide probably because gamma scattered off like radius. But, you know, in this costume region, you might get some of the things going.
This is just another movie, show you the jet. And here's the star, here's the jet. And you can see how the jet is kind of moving. And you have the backflows from this kind of working surface here. And you have the cocoon start to expand.
What is the scale?
This is the density, yeah. At the end of the movie, that's the size of the star. I can show you there. Ten to 11, about three light second. Yeah, here's the age of the star, you can see. Yes, yeah. Okay, so this is also did some 3D simulation. And so this is kind of 3D simulation. You see a little bit, you know, jet, but still it's stable. And it's actually quite interesting is, so initially when we first do the 3D simulation, we didn't make, we inject the jet still symmetric jet. And then at the end of simulation, we find the jet still perfectly symmetric. Because in our code, actually, there's nothing to break the symmetry. So of course, numerically, you have a little bit errors, but that growth rate is kind of too slow for you to see any asymmetry. So we actually, in this case, we actually inject a jet that's kind of asymmetric jet. So half of the jet is a little bit more powerful than the other half. So to introduce some perturbations.
So that gets wider, no? Just the cocoon.
Yeah, the cocoon is also kind of asymmetric. So this one, this side is larger. This.
What's your initial jet radius?
This one, we're trying to do 3D, so it's kind of hard to have this hook. So here, the low boundary here is 10 to the 10. This is 10 to the 10, and then we just assume the jet already.
Jet radius is what, 10 to 10?
Oh, I mean the radius of that? No, about 10 to 9. Because we make the opening angle to roughly a few degrees.
It's too much.
Why it's too much?
10 to 9 compared to the Schwarzschild
period. Oh, but the jet kind of moving out. Then you it's not like you think the radius of the jet beam should be the size of the Schwarzschild radius.
No, I'm just wondering how realistic.
But I think what actually set that is might be actually the, you have an equation disk here. So it's actually depend on, I think it should depend on the structure of your equation disk. So the equation disk has.
The pictures you show the energy release is, it's all where few
Schwarzschild.
Yeah, but.
The side is right. It's just the pressure balance that determines the cross radius. So I think it's quite
reasonable. Right. It's just suppose if you don't have an equation disk here, you even put your energy here, and eventually it will.
Point is, it's not very close to the hole, so the jet propagates many orders of magnitude of its initial radius, and it interacts with its tail of gas during all this propagation. And the question is, how much will be destroyed along the way, 3D jet?
Okay.
If you put
could expand sideways until, you know, pressure balance keeps
the angle.
So it's unlikely to be,
you know,
the size of the ejection source.
I mean, just suppose, of course, if you run the jet run longer enough, and then it will be spherical. Of course, that's the extreme case. At daytime, it's just like a blast wave. I mean, if you initially have a jet, and if you let it run longer enough, eventually it will become the spherical explosion. Right, it becomes a set of solution. That just, I mean.
No, at the very beginning, your jet is in almost compression equilibrium.
No, actually, not in the pressure equilibrium.
Right, you showed the diesel, right? Uh-huh. And you introduced the source of energy, uh-huh, somewhere, and then you what creates the flow.
Oh, you have the ramp pressure to push its way out. You mean, okay, so you're saying the pressure in the jet should be roughly equal to the pressure in the star to balance it. What I'm saying is
from the very beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning. What I'm saying is they're kind of the jet is moving, so you also have a ramp pressure. So what really balances it is the ramp pressure plus balancing the external pressure.
Get your initial asymmetry that makes the jet propagate from the lower density near the pole. But once you have that, then the jet is nicely collimated by the cocoon that forms.
Uh-huh.
Is that how it works?
Yes.
Well, the point is that the cocoon is very hot.
Yeah.
And it's, well, the pressure should not vary so much as in the middle.
And another thing is that the jet beam itself will be shocked by the high pressure in the cocoon also. So that's why even if we at the bottom of the jet we put a Lorentz factor 50, when it comes and breaks out of star, we only get about 10 because actually Lorentz factor actually decreases because it has been shocked. The jet beam. Okay, here I show you a picture. This is a figure of equivalent isotropic energy. So what I'm showing here, this is the isotropic energy. This is the angle. So those different lines are for materials with different Lorentz factors. So what you can see here is you have a kind of narrow jet, maybe about 2 or 3 degrees, that has a Lorentz factor larger than 100. So you have a narrow jet beam, and also you have a cocoon surrounding that beam, that jet beam. So our point is even if you are at large angle, you can still see some relativistic material. So we're arguing that kind of like what you see may depend on your viewing angle. So if you're on the jet axis, you see a kind of normal GRBs. If you're off axis, you may see X-ray flashes or other kind of stuff. Maybe I want to skip. So okay, perfect. So. The simulation I just showed you are all in a kind of what we call a helium star, so it lost its hydrogen envelope. So the size of a star is only about 3 light seconds, and the jet can make its way out of the star. But assume that you actually have a blue supergiant that will be at least 100 light seconds the size of the star. Then, if you have a jet, can you make its way out? So we're trying to do it. The simulation. What we did here is that we inject the jet by for the first 30 seconds. Yeah. So if you only have an engine that lasted 30 seconds, and then what you end up with is a late time, the jet lost its boost at the bottom. So no. You will never get a kind of a relativistic jet from a blue supergiant unless the central engine lasts very, very long. Okay. Here's kind of a cartoon. What I'm showing here is so now you have a relativistic jet. That jet is outside the star. It's moving relativistically. Okay, so the standard model is at Lorentz factor about 100, you have the internal shocks. Makes a GRB, and then the jet will swept the outside material and start to decelerate. So the Lorentz factor will go down from 100 to 50, 10, even lower. So So you have a relativistic jet. Initially, you have a relativistic effect. So the material in the jet, it's hard for them to move sideways. But now you start to move sideways. And if you calculate the light curve from those kind of things, you can actually, you know, what you see is in the optical light curve, you have a break. But all the previous calculations are just based on some toy models. You just have a kind of initially assume the jet, you have a top hat distribution, and then at late time it starts to expand. You're still assuming the jet is still kind of top hat, and but you make the Lorentz factor kind of decrease. That kind of toy model, you know, you can get those kind of calculation. But to really, you know, solve the problem, I think you have to do kind of numerical simulation. That's what we're trying to do, is just simulate the jet from ultra-relativistic to Newtonian. So the initial condition we put here is want to be simple. We didn't actually use our, the models from our previous simulation. We just, okay, let's start from simple case. I just assume the initial condition is just a Blanford McKee solution. And so you get get an extremely thin shell here. And this is our initial model, is just assume, so initially we set up Blanford McKee solution, the Lorentz factor gamma is about 20. And so if you want to start from 100 or something, you need the extremely high resolution. The shell is so thin. And another thing is you wouldn't expect too much sideways expansion from 100 to 20. If you're in an opening angle, it's actually, like 0.2. So we think it's okay because, before this moment, we can use analytic solution. But after a certain moment, you have to use kind of numerical simulation to follow the dynamics. So this is the, the initial setup like this. And this is the 279 days after the, the explosion. Not after our, initial, it's after the, just assume that the explosion started from, zero radius. So now you start to see, the jet start to expand here. You can see some kind of structure. And so this is the late time. So you can see how the jet is kind of moving. This is 2.7 years. So this is 9.7. Here you can clearly see we are kind of using, we're using kind of adaptive mesh, and we don't need to resolve those. So that's why you can see some, something here. You can see this is very coarse zone here. This is not just one zone. This is 8x8 zone in one of those blocks. But here we have extremely high resolution here. The jet is gone. Initially jet is like this. So then you start to expand sideways. So now you don't clearly see it.
What's the Lorentz factor in this case?
I don't know what the Lorentz factor right now, but initially it's 20. We start from 20. But here it should be considerably lower because it's already kind of symmetric. So
yeah, but the question is when the emission is going to be symmetric. It's more interesting. Not the morphology itself, but the emission. That depends on.
Right. That depends on. You can do it. So based on those those numeric simulations, we can do some calculation for the GRB optical light curves. So those works are ongoing. So I don't have anything to show. But we'll just assume kind of very simple. The most the simplest case is just assume a kind of a synchrotron emission. And then when you have the emission, and it's kind of optical thing, so all the radiation will go away. And that's kind of most simple case.
So what's the Lorentz factor of the shell now?
Actually, I'm not. I don't have.
One.
This should be very low now. It should be low. Because you can see initially it's a jet, but now it's almost symmetric, so it shouldn't be relativistic. Now it's already, So you can see, yeah. So this, oh, yeah, let's see. Okay, you can see it like this. So this is my last slide. Okay. So this is at 127 years. And then you see like this. So, so there's another interesting point I want to make is, and actually someone did those simulation before using a three prong, and he's a proper student, or did some SPH simulations. Just trying to, the problem that they're trying to do is, okay, so so you have a suppose you have a GRB simulation or a GRB explosion. So you have GRB, that's a jet. Then at late time it will become a kind of spherical explosion. But so if you have supernova, normally consider it a spherical. So then of course, you know, so the question you ask is, you know, you know, how long after the explosion, you know, the GRB is no longer, you know, you can no longer tell a GRB from a supernova. They're kind of like similar, right? So, so here it's 127 years. You can already see it's roughly. Of course, in that you should also calculate the radiation to see it's kind of like. From this plot, you can probably say, okay, after 100 or 200 years after the GRB, it's just like a supernova. Probably, maybe more powerful, but it's just like a supernova.
What's that bubble?
Here. We think this is kind of numerical stuff, artifacts.
Well, not
real thing. I think this is caused by the. Yeah. It's caused by here, so you can start to, you know, you have the kind of like you know, the ball shock kind of collide, you know, because here the kind of reflecting boundary, so you could just kind of have two things collide. But of course, you when you have the shock kind of colliding, you may get kind of like maybe you can get kind of. You know, Mach stem, you know, Mach reflection or something, but I'm not sure about those kind of things. It's because of the collision and generate some pitch. But the thing is, those are not very relativistic. They're not of, no, of course, all, everything is not relativistic now, but they're not containing a lot of energy there, so that doesn't matter too much. Yeah, so that's okay. Okay, so I will, that's it.
Between the ejection of the hydrogen envelope and the explosion.
Oh, what's that?
Okay. The time lag between the ejection of the hydrogen envelope and the explosion from the GRB deployment.
What? See.
Evolution of the star.
Oh, you injected. Yeah, actually, that.
I want to know how soon we need to eject the hydrogen envelope.
Oh, okay. Here,
Oh, just you have the wind for that. I. Years and you're still, but it's, so.
I don't think anybody so knows that.
Why do you limit all the
envelope? Well, it's not
so funny.
You see what
creates
that.
That's very common.
Yeah, what creates that? But another thing is, let's see, before 1987, you know, supernova 1987A, nobody thinks that a blue supergiant can make a supernova. But then you see you know, 1987A, it's from a blue supergiant.
Well, yeah,
right?
It's
a blue supergiant. Right, not very large, but I mean before that nobody actually expect you get a supernova from that, so that mean I'm just trying to say that you know, stellar evolution, I think there's still a lot of uncertainty there, so I don't think you, especially in the Wolf-Rayet case, the stellar wing, you know, how the stellar wing is going to work, I don't think. You know much about that, but that's actually very important because that set up the environment for the outside medium. So, yeah. So normally what people do is just assume either a kind of a constant density interstellar medium, or just assume kind of the density is 1/r². But I would argue you can make it anything you like, because you don't know the final stage of the stellar evolution. So the wing might be not be a, because for the density of 1/r², that means you have a kind of constant velocity of the wing, right? But that may not be the case. So
you put your energy at the base of the star, like 60, 50, and then this jet slows down. At the same time, the internal energy of the jet increases, right?
Right. So you basically conserve the energy.
That's the energy of the GRE. And at the same time, because the jet probably dumping some energy into the cocoon. Cocoon energy is essentially used to eject the envelope, making the supernova.
So first of all, we don't think that the supernova is get from that cocoon, because the temperature is probably not high enough to actually make Nikko 56. So you get a kind of a hot cocoon there, but it's probably not supernova, because for supernova it means you need it should be a billion, five billion or whatever, right? It should be very high, you know, temperature for you to make nickel. So you couldn't get nickel from that cocoon. It's probably. How energy is with what we find is the size of the star is about 3 light seconds, and it actually takes the jet 10 seconds to get out of the star. So you can think that 7 light second, injection, 7 second injection is wasted in the cocoon. But then after that, the channel is clean. Everything will get out.
So half going to the cocoon
balls. It depends on how long your jet lasts. I mean, if your jet lasts 20 seconds, then only 1/3 of the material energy goes to cocoon.
The propagation speed of your bomb shock, or how high?
Yeah, it's about 1/3 of say to half, say something like that. Depend on the model,
Absolutely.
Of course, it's not kind of like a constant speed. Initially, it's kind of slow. Later, it becomes much faster because the density is lower, and you have a gradient there.
Well, coming back to this, your very first simulations where you have deployed some energy in the axis and you get a jet there, it doesn't look very perimetric, does it?
Oh, you mean the, let's see. I mean, you mean here, right? What do you mean?
So what's that showing? That's velocity.
Yeah, well, what I show here is the velocity. This one, we actually, this is the.
Where is the jet?
This is kind of like a jet. This is, the unit here is a light second.
Very small scale.
Yeah. So this is a this is 10 kilometers.
This is your boundary.
Yeah. This is the boundary. Yeah. Because we don't have a the GR there, so it's not like, so we just put a kind of artificial boundary here.
Why can't you continue this
simulation?
Because it's just the initial phase. You can't tell me.
Yeah. We're trying to do that, because the next thing the we'll kind of have some difficulty with the equation disk kind of stuff. Because of the scarcity is not kind of self-consistent. Yeah.
Another question: well, this there is a very thin structure, the base, the jet, up to 0.1 power, right?
Okay. You mean here?
Yeah. Why is it so thin? It's like a flow already in this direction. If it was just a heat source, I would expect sideways expansion.
Yeah, but this, yeah, you would expect it to expand sideways, but what you have here, the, you know, this you have a high pressure, high density here. So it's very hard for material to move this way.
Right.
Because just the bump right here? Yeah. So this is a Quenching shock? This is actually not a Quenching shock. It's kind of like you have those kind of structure, then it's kind of like it's actually the Quenching shock is actually way outside.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
But this is a very sharp structure, so or is it just a
Those might depend on the detail of, you know, the dynamics of this equation disk thing. We are not, you know, at this stage we don't quite understand, you know, those things because of the viscosity we're putting there. It's kind of like we find our results kind of like sensitive to the, you know, viscosity you're putting in. So it's kind of like.
Right, coming back to the previous slide.
You want to.
So it's in the region, so.
You mean this one? This is a problem.
No.
This one? This one?
The next one. Yeah. Well, this one at the edge. Well, what's velocity there? Is it it's about 0.8 already?
Yeah.
So how did you get such high velocity in the region where it was
standing? Yeah, it's kind of like this is only 0.03 seconds after we dump in the energy there. That's kind of like, but there's a. Oh, before you put the energy, you have a question disk. You already have those kind of.
I can see the boundary of the jet, right?
Yeah, but you know you have those kind of structure here because. I mean, if you have this kind of structure here like this. Even if you put a kind of a you put energy, you know, circle symmetrically in this region, you will still get a jet because you put energy here, it's nothing compared to its pressure.
It's inertial effect. It moves slowly, but you have quite the pressure in the boundary with the kinetic pressure in the jet, you get the transverse expansion.
I mean,
where is the transverse expansion? That's the point. I can see the expansion. I can see the region which is collimated along the y-axis from the very beginning. There is no expansion. That's why I'm
What do you say? It's no expansion. It's roughly you're going like this.
It's
there, but at the very beginning, how do you get such a distribution?
Yeah, this is just a. Yeah, this is jet.
So are you saying just at the boundary, high velocity, there is a boundary of the disk? Is this the disk case?
You mean here?
Yes.
No, probably not.
What's not?
It's
already a cocoon developing as well.
No, cocoon can do that.
Cocoon can do that.
I thought that there is a boundary. If not, then where is the boundary?
It's like
a nozzle piece of jet. Yeah. Okay. So here another thing you should be aware of is you look at the color bar. You know, if you have you can see okay, here the boundary here. That's just maybe just, you know, this color bar can kind of emphasize the future. You know, you know what I mean. You see a lot of kind of structures from this color bar. So this, you know, it's kind of like a smooth transition, but because of the, you know, if you modify that, you know, your color table, you can make this go away. I don't think this is the, you know, something really.
Way out, maybe in the weakest spot, and that happens to be along the axis.
Well,
very
trivial. Come on, how can it be trivial? Well, pressure does not give you any anisotropy. It's just pressure.
If there is no boundary, then it has to be anisotropy.
That's what I say. The situation has been set up so that there's a weak spot, and that's why it breaks up. It's really nothing more than that to it.
If you have a cube, right? Or chimney, a big chimney, right? So you put some source energy source at the bottom of the chimney. Of course, it will go along the chimney, right?
Yeah.
But that's not what we have here.
Why you think it's... I don't think this is kind of like highly dynamically evolving. It's not like, you know, your queen disk is always like this a constant shape, you know, never changing. You know, the queen disk itself is also kind of changing. I don't see, you know, why that's a problem. This is, the whole thing is kind of, you know, still kind of here, it's kind of still, you know, collapsing, you know. It's what I'm saying is, okay, even if you get the jet, you get a kind of boundary, I don't think that boundary will just stay there, will never, you know, move. You kind of have a dynamic.
The jet starts with velocity, well, that's another thing. Velocity 0.6, 0.8, well, as far as my color vision velocity goes, just from the bottom, from the boundary. From the boundary. Where it should be zero.
Do we have other questions to speak? Because this is offline.
Actually,
you see,
it's
the shock. Sorry, there's another question now.
Well, it probably is a bit connected, but I would like to just ask about this. When you are making your jet by hand, no? Treating this like a boundary condition, giving the values for the jet properties. Did you try to run such simulation with a sort of a sequence of different boundary conditions? I mean, changing the parameters of the Can you comment on the results of this?
We change it So for example, one thing is you know, the opening angle. We change the opening angle. So when the initial opening angle is narrow, the jet will break out of the star faster than your opening angle is wide. That's all. Of course, it's, you know, but you would expect that.
Did you try just this one?
This is one thing. Also, try the different parameter. You know, different. You know, E dot the energy you put into the jet.
Can you see any robust feature? I mean, saying not changing parameters very differently, but I'm just spreading over. I mean, how in fact your calculation depends on the boundary condition, on the assumed boundary condition. Are they very sensitive if you change just a little bit?
Actually, I think the most sensitive parameter is actually the radius where you put the jet. Actually, that's actually I think it's kind of more sensitive to the you know, Lorentz factor, you know, the total
energy. Can you explain the dependence?
Yeah. So. The model we are kind of start with we actually only take kind of a massive star and let it collapse a little bit, right? So then we kind of like start, okay, so at some point we stop, we'll put a jet there. But then the one question is, you know, why you should put the jet at this moment and not later? There's actually, the difference should be, you know, at late time, the polar region, since it's kind of collapsing, if you let collapse further, you probably get the lower density in the polar region, and the jet will probably be more easy to get out, you know, those kind of thing. But so it's kind of like you don't know actually when you it's the best time, you know, what should be the correct time you actually put the jet in. So if you put it too early, then that inner region is still very dense, so the jet probably will die even if you put it there.
Where is your inner boundary? What
radius
in
Sydney? It's 2,000
kilometers. 2,000 kilometers.
Yeah, the radius.
Inner radius.
Yeah, when we do the not this case. When we just put the jet by hand. In this case, this is 10 kilometers. Yeah. Because in that case, we kind of like assume you already have a jet, you know, inside that, you know, 2,000 kilometers. So just say, okay, you have a jet, can you make it, you know, get out of the star?
And mass inside, how big? Mass of the inner star, let's see,
inside this boundary, that's a 2 point something solid mass.
So you worry about that, and all this structure has much less mass.
Yeah, I'm not sure about here, but the whole star is about 10 solid mass, something like that.
Excuse me, what is the number of blocks? Is this
the
number of cells or something?
Oh, number of blocks is actually, each block is the 8 by 8 cell. This is a two-dimensional simulation. So the total cell is this number times 8 times 8. But this is the adaptive mesh, so you shouldn't take that like think it's kind of uniform. So you have much higher resolution here.
Good. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.